You are listening to Fantha Tracks.
Rolling. Roll. Don't use any of this. Don't.
Okay, carry three.
Five. They love you. You know.
This is Princess Leia Organa. You're listening to Planet Leia.
Permission is granted to land on Planet Leia. Brought to you by Fantatrax. Here are your hosts, Claire Henry and Johanna Nibielios.
Hello and welcome to Planet Leia. You're joined today by myself, Claire Henry, and my co-host,
Johanna Lindea Nibielios.
Because as always, as you all know, I can't say that without making a complete mess of it. It's been about 6 weeks, I think, since we last had a good old chat about Star Wars.
Yes, it's the most wintry November that we've had here for so long. I mean, basically for more than a week, we had minus 10 degrees and minus 15 in the nights, and we even have some snow. So it's like proper winter already.
Well, I've had a little bit warmer because I made myself go a little bit warmer because I've obviously been in the sunshine state of Florida. My 50th birthday year, going full steam ahead. Part of my present was meant to be a stay in the Star Cruiser at Galaxy's Edge. But as everybody knows, that was not meant to be. They closed it down on the 30th of September.
It seems to have been really an epic last journey, though. I saw quite a few people who were posting that they had gotten like on the last few trips, then they were really going full steam ahead until it sank.
That's the sort of feeling I got from it. We still carried on with our holiday to Disney World. I booked out a full day and a half a day in Galaxy's Edge. So when they cancelled the Galactic Cruiser, I booked my holiday not through a UK company. Actually, I booked it through an American company on the recommendation of Martin Keeler. I went with Henry from Outer Rim Travels. Now, if you're looking for a very bespoke, tailored Disney package holiday, I would thoroughly recommend Outer Rim Travels. They were excellent. So he's an approved Disney agent. He had it all sorted for me. So when they announced that the Galactic Cruiser was closing, Henry was on there immediately contacting all his customers, including myself, and trying to get us all, because we had priority on the last flights of the cruiser, which unfortunately we couldn't do because we'd already booked flights. I'm a teacher, couldn't get the time off work. So Disney offered 50% off a stay on park. So Henry knew Galaxy's Edge was our priority. So he booked us onto the Caribbean resort. He booked us into the part of the Caribbean, which was beside the cable car, new cable car that takes you directly to Hollywood Studios. Of course, staying on park gives you the option of the 1 hour extra in before everybody else goes on. So we got there and I have to say I was absolutely blown away by Galaxy's Edge. The detail of it is incredible. I'm not going to lie, I was skeptical of it all, but wowee, you really did feel like you were walking into Star Wars and walking around Star Wars. It is done so well. First morning, we went straight there. We went to, had a quick brief walk around it and went straight to Smuggler's Run, which is the Fly the Millennium Falcon. We were on there within 5 minutes.
It was that because you could get in on an hour before the other ones?
It was because you got the early access to the park. But even still, I was told by a couple of people who we chatted to that the time of year that we went, October half term, is actually probably one of the best times to go because it's warm and it's not busy because all the American schools are still in school. Don't go 2 weeks beforehand, which is when I believe Mark went with Brian and Matt from Fantha Tracks, because that's Veterans Day and that's the busiest time of the year and really rammed. So like Smuggler's Run, I think, had a queue of 2 hours long. I don't think we queued any longer for it than 20, 25 minutes. Which is fine because the walkthrough is brilliant. The attention to detail is second to none. When you walk through to the ride, all the props, everything was there. You walk around the back of the Millennium Falcon and it's a full size and it looks amazing. Then we went into Star Tours, and because it's out of Galaxy's Edge, God, we just walked on it about 5 or 6 times without having to queue. We literally came off, went round, went back on, went round. Loads of new scenarios. Marcus was the secret spy, which was rebel spy, which was great. And one of them, I wasn't chosen at all, but brilliant scenarios, all new, some from the new movies, some from the old movies. Fantastic. So that was the first day. We spent a couple hours there just sort of acclimatized ourselves. And then we went to Epcot. I obviously didn't know what I was missing on the Star Cruiser, but I'm glad I didn't do it because we spent more time on the park. I'm sure if we'd have done the Star Cruiser, we would have really enjoyed it. But we went to Epcot. We did Guardians of the Galaxy. So then the next day was our full day at Galaxy's Edge. That was a busy day. We did Rise of the Resistance. Amazing. Absolutely brilliant. You walk out and you literally feel you're in Star Wars. And I would suspect that that's probably how you felt on the Star Cruiser. Yeah, everybody was in character. The Imperial officers were pushing you about and bossing you around. The sets were amazing. The storyline was good. We headed straight there and queued 20 minutes to get in. Then when we came out of there, the queue had gone up to 45 minutes. But by that point, we'd already booked virtual queues for it. So we could come back at a different time to that. I don't want to say any more than that because people obviously haven't been on it. You don't want to spoil the surprise. But my advice would be is when you go onto it, go to the front of the transporter. And if you manage to do it again, go to the back and look out the window. Because you will get the perspective of what it's like to be on a spaceship. And I would, again, suspect that that's what it was like on the Star Cruiser, but we just stayed there. Then we went to Savvy's workshop and we each built a lightsaber. I wouldn't have done that if we'd have stayed in the Star Cruiser because it was, and I'm not going to lie, it was expensive. It was $185 each and we built 3. So I had one, Sophie had one, Marcus had one, because I'm going to put them up on my wall of our stairs on the opposite side to my Skywalker lightsabers that I have.
Did you do a family theme for them?
Sophie went dark. So you get a choice of lightsabers. What was open for us was Rebellion one, a dark one, a natural one, they called it, and another one, which we didn't choose. So Sophie went dark. So hers is a bit like Rey's, but dark. I went light side. Mine was a bit more Skywalker-esque. And you could choose all the bits to go. You had like 3 hilts, 3 top parts, 3 bottom parts, 3 middle parts, 3 middle bottom parts. And you could choose which ones you wanted to do. And then you got to choose your kyber crystal to go in it. And that was the color. So I went yellow. Sophie went red. She went pink originally, and then she went into the Encores and bought red, and Marcus went green. It was really, there was a backstory to it. It told you all this, that, and the other. Very good, really. And again, I'm not going to give it away. Quite emotional, really, really good experience. It was worth it. Marcus would tell you it was a load of old tot and it wasn't worth anything, but it'll look good on my staircase when it's repainted in February. Then we went into Onker's Den, which is the main shop opposite the Millennium Falcon. And Sophie and I had a blast. May have bought myself the original Princess Leia dress.
Oh,
it's so great.
So we'll see it on you when?
I'm not sure. I haven't quite worked that one out yet, but I'm going to say it's definitely going on. Apparently, it won't pass Rebel Legion.
No, it won't.
But I'll tell you, it's as close as the thing I've ever seen. It's very well done. The belt won't pass. It's rubbish. I need to order myself a new belt. So when am I going to wear it? Don't know. Probably National Book Week in school.
Yeah.
And bring the Leia book. This is the other thing that's happening in Galaxy's Edge at the minute, is they're releasing merchandise that you could only get on the Star Cruiser into the shops. So the Sabacc that was only available on the Star Cruiser was available in the marketplace, which was brilliant. The lightsaber from the Star Cruiser was released that day on a limited run. I bought it. It is really lovely lightsaber. My husband thinks I'm going to stick it on eBay. It's going on the wall as well.
Hi, this is Ethan Sachs, writer of Bounty Hunters, and you're listening to Fanthatrax.
Encore is, I think it's a hammerhead. So they have that live and they have all these creatures in these bubbling things and Mandalorian stuff hanging from the walls, like beheaded tauntauns and wampas and all that sort of stuff all sticking up like trophies. So then we had our lunch on a table overlooking the Millennium Falcon. Then Sophie and I bought magic bands and played the Bounty Hunter Hunt. So you go to a station, tap your magic band, up pops a voice and a picture, and it tells you you need to go and find this bounty hunter. And we basically spent the rest of the afternoon exploring Galaxy's Edge playing this game, and your magic band vibrated really fast. It was like hot and cold. So if it was like beep, 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 you were nowhere near it. Yeah. If it went beep, 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 you were getting closer. And then you went to the door, got your phone and the Disney Play app. You scanned the door and you could see the bounty hunter. And then you tapped it and then you collected it. And then you went back to the station and Constable Zuvio came out, like this little like shudder thing came up and went, well done, you've done this. And then you go off and you collect it again and you get a certain amount of points and then you basically run round doing all that. That was brilliant. So we spent a couple of hours doing that and we just got to see all the different nooks and crannies of Galaxy's Edge that you maybe wouldn't have done if you hadn't been aware. And we wouldn't have been aware, but Martin told us about that and we had a great time doing that. Then I went into the droid factory. We didn't build a droid. There's no point. I'm not interested. But I did buy the Galactic Credit gift card, $100, the minimum on it. Then we booked ourselves into the cantina for cocktails and snack. Use the Galactic Credit. They said, oh, and how are you going to pay for this? And you go, I'm going to pay with this. And they were like, local currency. So then they go into all sort of like this patter of stuff and everything. And that was really, really good fun. The cocktail I had was incredible. Sophie had the non-alcoholic one. Marcus and I had the two alcoholic ones. We had the platter, an antipasta dish, but it was done in a Star Wars style. My only complaint is the cantina was absolutely blooming freezing. And we were in our t-shirts and shorts because it was like 30 degrees outside. Yeah. You come into the cantina and it was so cold. We didn't stay longer than an hour. We had our drinks, we had our platter and then we left because you couldn't stay in it any longer. It was just too cold.
But maybe that's actually by plan because they want to get people out.
Possibly. But you can't go in unless you've booked. And then it was nighttime by that point and the ship on top of the Black Spire was like lighting up as if it was going to take off. The Millennium Falcon engines were lighting up and it was making all the sound and it was dark and the perspective of it gave that sense of distance. It was incredible. Oh, we did buy the Coca-Cola, the Sprite and the Diet Coke in the thermal detonator bottles. Had to be done. We didn't buy blue milk. It looked absolutely minging. And everybody that was walking away with it, who slurped it all, were going, So we're like, right, we're not going to waste $15 on that. She says, having wasted $600 on three lightsabers. I had a walk around and there were people playing sabacc and showing you how to do that. Sophie and I then went and had a walk around the shops. Some of the costumes that were available on the cruiser had been released. Actually, I thought of you when I saw them. Very elegant, beautiful robes. Expensive, but in the scheme of things, as expensive as anything in a Disney park, really. It's all relative, isn't it? It's what you want to spend it on. So we saw it sort of like through its day through tonight. We did the Rise of the Resistance another two times. We did Smuggler's Run about four times. My advice to anybody is if you're doing Smuggler's Run, tell them you want to be the pilot or the navigator, and they will hold you back so that you are the pilot or the navigator. It's the best fun. You do have to press all the buttons, you know, and you have to push it up. It was really worth it. I'll be honest, I think Smuggler's Run was better for me than Rise of the Resistance. Rise of the Resistance was breathtaking because of the attention to detail, but the Smuggler's Run was more fun. Nighttime when we were leaving was about 8:30. So the park was sort of closing and we were going off to watch the Fantasia show. It was getting quieter. So it was nicer to walk around and have some good fun and that sort of thing. Things to think about. There always is. It could do with another ride just to sort of separate it out a bit.
Yeah, I mean, and now it seems, yeah, you did arrive several times, but still you, it seems like you go round and round. And even if you have a lot of attention to details, I guess the fourth time you don't look too much at the scenery, just go for the ride.
If you're a Star Wars fan, you would do what we did. You'd spend a day there, you'd do the bounty hunt, and you would explore it. Rise of the Resistance wait time went to 65 minutes. It's not worth a 65-minute wait, in my opinion, if I'm perfectly honest with you. My advice is if you want to go to Galaxy's Edge and you want to get the maximum out of it, you need to stay on park. You can't book that through any English agent. It's a minimum, I think, of 6-night stay. But if you book it through somebody like Outer Rim, which is what we did Saturday, Sunday, Monday night, and one full day in Galaxy's Edge is what you need. For a Star Wars fan, it's really breathtaking. But a day and a half is all you need. Disney itself isn't an experience. It's changed. We went about 6-7 years ago, and I feel they're just out to grab money.
Okay. I've always felt that. So.
Yeah, I know that. But now, for example, this is it. We were able to stay on park. And I know the system is changing. I know people are going to come back and say the system's changing. And I know it is. But for those of us who have done this system, you have to wake up before 7 o'clock in the morning so that you can join a virtual queue for the big rides, Rise of the Resistance, Guardians of the Galaxy, Pandora. Pandora is amazing. Honestly, it's fantastic. Oh, and Tron, that was the other one. Tron is brilliant. You have to get up early to do that, which is fine because we were getting up at 7 anyway to be at park for 8. So that was okay. But then you have to buy these fast passes, which when you stayed on park before, were part of the deal. So that's $17 each every day. But then if you don't get onto the virtual queue, you can buy going on to Tron or Pandora or... you can buy a ride on it. Now, bear in mind, you've paid $160 or whatever it is for the day. You paid your fast passes, $16 each. We were lucky we didn't miss the virtual queue. But if you wanted to go on Tron again, you had to buy it. $20 each again?
Yeah.
Piss take, in my opinion. We did it because we met up with some of Sophie's friends. We wanted all to go together, so we all bought the same time, which was fine. We sucked it up and did it. I'm not going to lie, it wasn't a pleasurable experience going through this sort of be up at 7, join this queue, do that, do the other. You spent a lot of time on your phone, checking the queues, checking the times, and the fast pass only gave you one time on the ride.
Oh.
Whereas the fast passes at Universal, and Universal is a different experience altogether now. If you stay on park, you get unlimited fast passes on every single ride except Hagrid's ride. And you just keep going on it and on it and on it and on it. You don't need to keep checking your phone. It all just felt a little bit tight and a little bit money grabbing, even more for Disney than what it usually is. So we spent the fast passes on the 3 days that we did it. I did buy the dress. I did buy the lightsabers, oh, and ears, but that was it. Beforehand, we'd have gone out, I'd have maybe bought a t-shirt, and maybe bought a little cute key ring or, you know, that sort of stuff. I was thinking, I'm not spending that money. You just felt that you were being ripped off left, right, and centre. There was an edge to it.
And it seems like everything that you planned, you had really planned to buy, read, like, you're, oh, that was a cute thing I hadn't expected.
There was loads of cute things, loads of things I would have bought. I just was like, I'm not doing it, which was odd because we had the budget to do. Because we hadn't done the Galactic Cruiser, we had this money that we'd saved. We went to the outlet mall instead and bought a whole load of trainers and jeans and all that sort of stuff instead and brought that home. Top tip, if you've bought a lightsaber, you can bring it through the TSA security and bring it on as hand luggage, which we didn't know. And I'd brought an extra long bag and packed it all, but I could see lots of other people bringing their lightsabers home on the plane, which was an interesting one. All in all, Galaxy's Edge is worth a visit, and Disney was worth a visit. You know, we had a great time at it. We left Disney on the Tuesday and checked into Universal, and we did Universal Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night. I thought Sophie would have enjoyed Universal better because obviously it's the big coaster, da 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 da. But she enjoyed Disney better. But we planned it It worked out well. It was the right time of year. It wasn't busy. The weather was lovely. There was no rain. And the fast passes, we managed to time it all perfectly. And with that, we got extra rides because we stayed on park.
Well, I've been on a queue, more than 2 hour queue at university for one of the Harry Potter rides. But it was basically, it was one, we were in a company and one person really wanted to go and we had great fun together. But yeah, it wasn't worth the wait.
The Hagrid ride, you couldn't. So we literally went straight to that, as does everybody on park, because there is no fast pass for that. And we queued for 40 minutes for that. That was the longest queue we did the whole week. Really great ride. Don't want to spoil it, but it's not worth a 45 minute wait either, in my opinion. But then, although we're British, we're not terribly good at queuing the Henrys. Mm-hmm. Like, we kept our time and we chatted to lots of people and it was really lovely that way. But no, VelociCoaster is definitely the best at Universal. It's amazing. We did that 4 times in a row. And then after the 4th go, we all sort of went, I think we've got a touch of vertigo.
I mean, I'm the person who really likes going on roller coasters. So for that reason, I've been more to you. When we have had celebrations in Orlando and even we've gone to Universal more than Disney because I like roller coasters.
Hulk 3 times in a row.
Yeah, the Hulk is my favorite ever, I think.
I blacked out in the Hulk this time. I actually blacked out. It was just like, I think that was like the 3rd go we'd gone on. And I was like, oh, and it's the one when it goes up and then it literally just does that twist at the start.
Yeah.
I just was like, I'm gone. And then I kind of woke up halfway through the ride again. I was like, oh. But
I like it because I hate the slow hill upwards and all the roller coasters. So I love them when you get shot out like a cannon, like you do.
When Celebration is near a Universal again, you need to do the VelociCoaster. Oh my God. It just literally just goes whoosh, and it is so smooth. There's this one twist and you think your hair is going to skim the water when it does the twist around. Oh my God, it was epic. And then we did the Hollywood Horror Nights there. Not my thing at all. I absolutely wet my pants. I hated every single bit of that. I do not do horror movies. They made me do the Stranger Things house. They made me do another house. And it's basically people coming out and jumping at you.
Jump scares, yeah.
And then there's like 5 scare zones when you walk through the park. And one of them was like based on the Chainsaw Massacre. So there was people coming up with chainsaws and scaring the wits out of you. There was Festival Zombie time. Oh God. But the Harry Potter one was brilliant because it was all the Death Eaters coming up and spooking you. That was good. I enjoyed that one. But the rest of them, I peed myself. I'm glad I had my tenor lady on that night. It was not good. But again, there were 5 coasters open that night, backwards and forwards and off and on. The Mummy, the music one where you got to select the music. That was a really good coaster as well. So I'm going to say a good 9.5 out of 10 for Galaxy's Edge. Thoroughly recommend it. Really, really, really good.
For everything in one location, daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds, bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
We're going to talk about the female baddies of the galaxy. I mean, we have talked a lot about Mon Mothma on this pod. We have Leia. We have talked so much about him. And then we were thinking, like, with Ahsoka. Ahsoka wasn't the interesting one. The interesting character was the villains. So we were starting to think about what female villains do we have in this galaxy.
When you think about it immediately, you don't really think of any female villains in Star Wars.
This is where I think it's really interesting to see also how the Star Wars galaxy and the whole, how it mirrors our own society. I mean, when the films were made, it was huge that you had one female lead. You had Leia, who was the hero, and she wasn't just a damsel in distress. In our pilot episode where we talked about the female pilots, we were talking about this pilots that they did film female pilots, but they were cut off because they didn't want to see women killed on screen and everything like that. A lot of the early legends was very much based around that. Well, basically, the Empire, you only had 2 Sith, Emperor and Vader, and the whole Empire was very male and very white. And that is so, the first one I would like to talk about is the one who came up from Kevin J. Anderson, and that's, of course, Emerald Dala. She got a first name eventually, but we'll just call her Dala. Or as I said, Star Wars is 2 Dalas. It's Amidala and Emerald Dala. And they are two quite different persons.
I was going to say, you know, you have to be very careful with the whole pronunciation on this one.
You have the Throne trilogy that comes out, and then you start to get these. And you have Kevin J. Anderson, and he's doing his Young Jedi books, where you get the Solo children and everything. And he was really, one of the main authors of the 90s, both good and bad. He created a lot of stuff. He also created what was basically, when you started to think that all the Star Wars book was basically Warlord of the Week. Found a new Imperial Warlord. They had a new flotta or a new super weapon, and then it got destroyed. I think it's even Han Solo. I think that's in the New Jedi Order when he jokes about all the super weapons that the Emperor had. And they're like, and what will you end up with? It says something like the nostril of Palpatine. One of the creations is the Amaral Dala. Of course, then you had to have an explanation why you all of a sudden have a female admiral when you see all in the films you never saw a female officer. But her backstory then is, of course, that she was the one exception. Just like Thrawn was the alien exception.
Yeah.
Dala was the female exception.
Female exception. Which is unheard of, really, at that time, wasn't it?
That's actually quite plausible that, you know, you let one so win. Or a way of saying, no, we're not against women. Look, we have one. But she was hid away in the Maw installation and overseeing all the super weapon creations. And she comes in when basically one of the more sillier. Well, Star Wars is silly. And one of the problems with Dala is that she's really one of the more sillier baddies. And I think Kevin J. Anderson even said that he wanted to create Dala as an antipoint to Thrawn, where Thrawn was very cool and calculated. Dala would be the impulsive one who just shoots first, asks later. But that more or less made her quite incompetent, to be honest. She always gets defeated, and she's always gets defeated in quite spectacular ways. Emotional women, they can't handle big decisions, and so no, that wasn't really good at all. I don't think it's strange that she disappears after like the 90s. When you have the whole New Jedi Order, you wanted to reboot it, make it a bit darker, grittier Star Wars universe with the books, which was one of the huge surprises when she returns in The Legacy of the Force. And yeah, she actually ends up being like head of state for a while.
Despite her many crimes, she becomes like the galactic leader.
That was really okay.
She was elected. So who on earth elected her? That's the bit that's like, what on earth's going on there?
Yes, and this is when the galaxy is in quite, well, all as always in turmoil, when you've had Jason Solo turn bad and trying to take over the galaxy.
There
is a very strong anti-Jedi sentiment, and she comes up as the anti-Jedi option.
Okay. Is it true?
But she gets ousted from that as well, since she's so incompetent.
So is it true that part of her backstory is that she had a relationship with Tarkin?
Yes. And that's also one like, no, this is not a good look for when you're trying to make a believable female baddie. It's like, we have to connect her somehow emotionally to her character. And we pick Tarkin.
Yeah,
any young woman would look at Tarkin, and you need to be really hungry for power.
Hi, this is Ethan Sachs, and you're listening to Fantatrax.
Then we have another female villain where that was actually done a lot better. And that was Aisan Izzard from the X-Wing books. When I need to relax, I go back to the X-Wing books and read them. They will always be my canon. They are so well written. They have good characters. They have a good storyline. They are enough closely connected to the films. I mean, they are not... One of the main things with X-Wing books is that they are trying to take Coruscant. Kicks off quite close after Return of the Jedi, but they are also funny. So especially when you get into the Wraith Squadron books, you sit there laughing. And I think one of the most lauded books, which is basically a standalone book, it works so well for itself, is The Starfighters of Adamar by Aaron Alston. And you read because it's a plain, fun adventure book. Not everything needs to be dead serious with the now, of course, it's about trying to get a planet to join the galactic, and it's the Empire and the Republic, which side will he choose, But it still, it boils down to a fun adventure. And it's even, Aaron Alston said that the name of Adumar, of the planet, was even chosen as an homage to Alexandre Dumas, the author of The Three Musketeers.
Oh.
And I mean, her father is seen now in the news, since he's the one who built up the Imperial Security Bureau. Of course, in the old legends, she ousted him and took it all over by himself. So she's a much more Thrawn-like character, but more interesting because,
yeah,
I've said it before, I think Thrawn is pretty boring. And Ahsoka didn't change my mind.
Everybody was quite in awe of the actor that did Thrawn.
I have nothing against the actor. It's just like...
No. I mean, the character. I think it's very hard to bring to life somebody that's basically a humanoid and he's blue.
One other thing is that she was rumored to be the lover of Palpatine. And it worked because Isar is so evil and so genius that you can really see her getting to the closest power. She's into it for the power, and Palpatine is the power. And for some reason, that worked. While Darla and Tarkin was like, ooh. It's fascinating because, I mean, she's an intelligence officer. So all this about spies, she gets networks, she works with, and she has the top scientists to help her trying to regain power and everything. There's a lot of brainwashing going on when she's in charge, because she managed to take people. And she's the kind of evil, I mean, if she was ever in film, you wouldn't be surprised to see her sitting with a cat in her lap. And this is the X-Men series. It's a fun villain that you like to hate, but you still admire her because she is so genius that it is really tough. I mean,
Has she got humanity sort of streak to her, or is it just she's just pure evil?
She's pure evil, I would say, but not in a maniac cackling way. She's not a Sith. She just wants power, and she's willing to do everything to get that power. And yeah. In the end, it turns out that Isard actually got one of the three superstar destroyers. So Thrawn had one, Vader had one, and then Isard had one.
Oh, okay. So apparently there's a thing that he found on X, which is the spaceships in relative size to cities.
Yes.
And there's the superstar destroyer.
Yes.
In it.
It's massive. But you can't.
So for her to get that is quite something else, isn't it?
Yes. And of course, the cool thing is that she manages to get it. Okay. I mean, the books are so old, I think I can spoil them now. She has a Star Destroyer and it's buried under the buildings of Coruscant because she escapes Coruscant when the Republic takes over. And it's also been used as a prison. And that's an interesting because she was inventive in how she used her villainous and what she did. It wasn't just plain show up with a Star Destroyer, have a huge fleet, and then get defeated.
Mm. And it's quite interesting in those books. They are before their time almost, aren't they?
I would say they're pretty much in the time. This is the 90s, so I mean, you could get the female. And that's also the X-Wing books. You have the main characters are male, but you have a lot of supporting women around them, and they are big parts of the book as well. And Isard is one of them. It was starting to get like you can have a female protagonist or antagonist, but you still didn't have a lot of women in it.
Yeah.
And I think that is where we can really go into how it's changed. I mean, now we're living in, thankfully, a world where we are much more open about, we're living in a diverse world. Of course, the Star Wars galaxy should be diverse, even more so with aliens and people from different planets. It shouldn't just be white and male. Even if I, for some reason, I liked the Empire when it was so oppressive and it was only male white people who could rise to the ranks and it was tough for everybody else. But I totally understand because I think we've talked about this before. Like, it's boring when women are just, oh, it's the strong women. No, we want to see women are from weak to strong, from good to evil. We want to see range in their characters.
We're happy. This is the thing is we're happy with any female character as long as it's A, well written.
Yeah.
And has a purpose and a meaning. I'm going to say, by listening to you about the one that became the galactic leader.
Yeah.
Would you say that she met that sort of criteria, or?
And I should
say, she a throw together to sort of appease everybody?
She was quite a flat character, unfortunately. I mean, some of the early Stoughtons, especially those by Kevin J. Anderson, they had flat characters. But it should also be said that Kevin J. Anderson came from writing a lot of youth books and for younger readers. So it's maybe not strange that when I read the books and I was older than the ones who had been the original age group, from my view, they got better authors that could do better justice to all characters.
Yeah.
But that's also an interesting, I mean, how you switch around a character. And then you actually have the Asajj Ventress.
Yes, she appeared earlier on, didn't she? She's one that moved into canon. She's one of the ones that the people deemed that, oh, actually, she's going to be a good one to move into canon, isn't she?
But Asajj, if we talk about her Legends character, I mean, she shows up in the Jende Tartakovsky Clone Wars series, the first micro-series, or rather, what was called, and I loved it. I mean, that really was my heyday as a Star Wars fan, was between episode 2 and 3, because I loved the Clone Wars multimedia project that he had, where they told the story about the Clone Wars, and you had the animated micro series, you had the books, and you had the comics. You even had games, but I don't play games, and comics doesn't work for me. I don't quite get the medium.
No, I tried. I did. I was massively into comics when I was like a kid, but not really anymore.
I'm into like the more traditional French bande dessinée. You have like, I don't like Tintin, but you have Asterix and
I love Asterix.
And Lucky Luke, those kind of band. And I think the art and storytelling is so different that I have a problem with the more American version of the comics. They are a great art form. It's just not a medium I'm quite understanding. But I had friends who are really into comics, so I could always borrow that and I could keep up. And it was so fascinating how they managed to interweave the Clone Wars through all these different mediums. And yes, Asajj shows up in the micro series and basically shows up as a baddie who just shows up and kills a bunch of people. And then Count Dooku takes her on. And she's also interesting in her background character, how she was brought up, because she was actually, I remember when I bought the art of episode 2.
Yeah.
And you had this beautiful character who was like, they didn't know who the new Sith apprentice would be. It ended up being Dooku, but they didn't know. So they had a lot of sketches and they had this very strong female and it was like, wow, this could have been the new Maul. She was bald and had this, she looked so cool. And it was so nice to see her brought to life. I also think that's interesting because, I mean, that sketch is clearly that they took that concept drawing and they turn it into the baddie Asajj, but it's also clear the inspiration, to me at least, for Barriss Offee's Jedi character.
I'm just sort of flicking through as we're chatting about her. What I didn't realise is that her home world is Dothamir.
Now, that depends a bit on which canon you go for.
Okay, so explain. Yeah.
Legends had her be, I think, a Ratatak. She has different backstories. She's also a very conflicted character. And I think that's why they kept it. She was like, if Ahsoka is the one, now we're getting into Clone Wars, but if Ahsoka is conflicted about the role of the Jedi, but she's the good side, Asajj is the bad side version. She wanted to become a Sith. She wasn't trained properly, but she's tapping into her dark side. But in the end, she's going to say, no, I'm in it for my own.
Why isn't she considered a true Sith?
Because she was never taken on. I mean, Dooku used her as not a proper apprentice. I mean, only two. There can be Emperor and Dooku. There is totally non-canon version, which is pretty cool, actually, where, I mean, this is non-canon. It was never canon in any way, but where she actually kills Dooku and she ascends to become the Sith apprentice with the goal of replacing Palpatine. And the art from that, to me, it's just dark Rey.
Oh.
Yeah. Without
and
hair.
So do you think that was the influence?
I can't say it was like that. But on the hand, it's a cool female character with a hood and a red blade. So, but
what you're saying, you're saying that we see her in different parts of it. So where do we see her then? We see her in Legends?
We see her in Legends a lot in the Legends Clone Wars, where you have not so much novels. She was in the micro series and then she was in the comics. And she had a very huge obsession with Obi-Wan Kenobi. I think her comic arc even was called Obsession. Then she is brought up in the Clone Wars, which of course is now canon. And that is where they also switch her story around and it makes her into a Night Sister of Dathomir.
Right. And so do you think that we will see Descendants or something if there's another series of Ahsoka or something?
No, I think she is well buried in the Clone Wars. I haven't seen the Clone Wars. What I think happened is she simply disappears. I think also that's the reason why you got this non-canon way of telling what could have been, but she disappeared. And I actually have a bit of a hard problem seeing what her role would be. They don't need another loose of a dark side. Elspeth could have been Asajj. If they would have wanted to tie it in more, and considering how Dave Filoni likes to tie into the Clone Wars, but I guess that would have been a bit too much. And that is something with the Clone Wars. I mean, they totally remade the Night Sisters into something totally different from the Legends canon. And now when we've seen Ahsoka, Star Wars is a visual franchise, and I mean, they looked pretty cool.
Hi everyone, this is Misty Roses, and you are listening to Fantha Tracks. I have spoken.
Well, I have a Dala cosplay.
I've not seen that.
No, you haven't seen it. It's a quite a tight jumpsuit, but I'm hoping to grow back into it. Okay, I made it because I wanted a nice, comfortable Imperial costume, and it's like I can use my most comfortable black boots. It's a stretch material jumpsuit. And she's a redhead, so I can use my own hair.
But I am going to say, when you wear a jumpsuit, you live with the decision to wear a jumpsuit when you need to go to the toilet.
Oh, yes.
And that is a big female problem when you do that. Yeah. Easy enough for a bloke, not so easy enough for us. Yeah. We have to live with that decision when we go. And you've got to plan it before you need to actually go for certain reasons.
And I will say one thing. Actually, I was asked at the last small convention, I was like, when are you going to use your Admiral again? I was like, I know that those people haven't read the books, or I'm pretty sure they haven't, but they still think it's cool to have a female Admiral leading them.
Oh, absolutely. There are a lot of female villains in Star Wars. Anybody who wants to make a comment, send us in their favourite villain, shall we say, and why, we would much appreciate it. If not, you're going to hear Johanna and I in our next episode talking all about canon villains, particularly in the latest TV series. You don't think are villains, but they, but are they? Are they not?
We will discuss.
We will discuss. Johanna has got to fangirl over her legends, and we're going to sign off for now. Where are we going to find you next Star Warsing between now and the next episode? Have you got anything planned?
I don't have anything planned. It's probably full Christmas mode.
I've missed MCM Comic Con and I missed Wales Comic Con, which was a bit of a shame, really. I'll be off to the Disney 100 exhibition. Start of January, and I believe that there's a good old Star Wars section in that to have a good old walk around. So I'll be able to feedback on that as well. As for now, we're going to obviously finish our episode off with the usual from Johanna.
Thanks for listening to Planet Leia. And remember, if you want to be a part of the action and stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news, visit fanthatracks.com and be sure to comment, like, and share on any of our social media feeds at fanthatracks. You can reach out to us and send in your listener questions by emailing radio@fanthatracks. Subscribe, leave a review, preferably a 5-star one, on Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. And as always, thanks to James Sample for composing the Fantha Tracks intro and our Planet Leia opening music, and Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers. Remember to tune in to Good Morning Tatooine live Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. UK, 4 p.m. Eastern and 1 p.m. Pacific on Facebook, YouTube and Twitch. And check out our Fantha Tracks Radio Friday night rotation every Friday at 7 p.m. UK for new episodes of The Fantha from Down Under, Planet Leia, Desert Planet Discs, start your engines, collecting tracks, cannon fodder, and special episodes of Making Tracks. And every Tuesday at 7 p.m. UK time for your weekly episode of Making Tracks.
We're going to wish you a Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year. We're going to come back in the new year, full of the joys of the new year, with the evilest woman from Star Wars. Happy New Year! Start as we mean to go on, I feel. So thanks ever so much for listening. We love you. You know.
Coming up next on Fanta Tracks Radio, it's Making Tracks.
I'm glad I had my tenor lady on that night.